Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Artsy Fartsy Immigrants. Guys, things are crazy. It's a busy week and there's lots of things going on in this jumbled old thing that I call life. So this week's episode is going to be a little intro for you because you do know that every week I do try to give you a little something fresh, even if it's short. However, this will be, I know, I'm waiting for the screams, I'm waiting for the teardrops to fall, a rerun episode. I was thinking the last few days and the last week or so, how long it's been since I visited our very first interview, really the first real episode of Artsy Fartsy Immigrants, back when my audio quality was less than perfect and my interview skills were, as the professionals say in the industry, sloppy. No, but it was really like the starting point for this whole thing, and it really got me excited to, you know, we're finished with this 12 Songs for 12 Friends breakdown series that took a long time to get through, and, you know, revisiting this first episode reminded me of the foundations and, like, the original goal behind having this podcast, which was to talk to people in a similar situation to myself, creative, you know, freelancing sort of types, the musicians, filmmakers, and the like, who have moved abroad, who are, you know, expatriates living in a different country from the one they were born in, and how they're navigating life in that position, because it's a challenge and it is interesting and it sometimes is amazing and fun and sometimes it's really scary and troubling and complicated, you know. So this episode, I went back and looked at it. I cut out a little bit of the beginning because there was a lot of adjusting the microphones and a little chit-chat about cats, which isn't so exciting, and moved it into basically the next conversation starter after this shuffling cat part. And it's still a longer episode than I remembered it being, so at least we have a nice chunky episode this week. If you know this episode well, then obviously I understand if you want to skip this one or if you just want to have it in the background. But if you've never spent the time to really listen to this one, or if you've heard it just once a long time ago, it is worth it to go back and listen to Matt. He's got a very soothing voice, he's got a great accent, and he's very charming, I have to say. I'm going to try and get Matt on this show again very soon. He's been, his whole life is so different now. He's been traveling several countries with his girlfriend Amy, and they play so many concerts together, and it's really unbelievable what he's accomplished since this first interview came out. What is it? Almost 3 years ago. So really, really impressive. Without further ado, I will just let this fade right into that interview. So thank you so much for listening. And if you enjoy today's show or you enjoy this podcast in general, please make sure to go in the show notes. We have our social medias. You can follow us there. But most importantly, just tell a friend about the podcast. Go to Apple or Spotify, wherever you listen, and give it a review or a follow or a like or a share. Anything like that really helps this podcast grow. It really, you know, it sparks something in the algorithm that helps, you know, bring it closer to new listeners. And we really want to grow this Artsy Fartsy family so that we can keep doing the show. So thank you so much. I hope you enjoy. This is the first real episode of the podcast, the first interview with musician from Manchester, Matt Austin.
You told me that you listen to podcasts. So what are some of your favorite podcasts?
Joe Rogan.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And
that's a big one. That's a nice one.
Yeah, comedy, just comedy podcasts. I used to listen to some history ones, but no, mainly just comedy. But Joe Rogan's a bit more than comedy because he has such a wide variety of guests, you know.
He interviews everything, right? Mm-hmm. Like philosophers and
anything that he's interested in.
Yeah, that's a good point, yeah. Do you think Joe Rogan's kind of one-sided on things?
Yeah.
Yeah?
And his music taste, man. So, like, ugh. He loves American, like, rock and roll or whatever, but yeah. You have to tell me when we're starting, yeah?
Oh, we already started.
Oh, shit. We're talking about Joe Rogan.
I also like, I don't know, were you ever really into Marc Maron's podcast?
It's behind a paywall, isn't it?
His is called WTF.
Yeah, but it's behind a paywall, so you have to pay for it, I thought.
No, it's on Apple Podcasts.
Ah. Then yeah,
I know it's also on Spotify. It's on Spotify.
It?
Yeah.
I've seen some with like good guests, with super famous guests, but I thought you had to pay for it, so I never followed it. But yeah, he's the actual king.
Yeah.
Joe Rogan's like the
He capitalized at a perfect time.
Right.
Yeah. And then, but he does something kind of special. Mm. Marc Maron, I don't know. I really like his interview style because, I mean, he's famous for getting something kind of casual out of the guests he has on. I mean, he has everybody on there from like Louis C.K. to like indie artists or like Mac DeMarco, comics, yeah. Obama. It's unbelievable the guests he has.
Yeah, that's where his musician guests are way better than Joe Rogan's one.
Yeah, yeah.
He's so funny when he talks about music, Joe Rogan. He's such an expert on so many things, but then music, man. He says the stupidest. That's what makes me want to do a podcast or I want to listen to a musician doing a podcast. That's nice.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. That's true.
But then again, I think, I don't know, musicians should also focus on being musicians. That's my actual problem with being a musician at the moment, is that you've got to be an expert in 100 different things.
Do you think like musicians stretch themselves too thin?
In a way, yeah. Or like the ones with personalities that suit extroverted, promoting, photogenic, everything they'll succeed if they're good at, I don't know, talking to a microphone, then they'll succeed. But some weirdo like what's he called, Daniel Johnston or something, yeah. Maybe no one will ever see him because he takes really bad Instagram photos or something, you know?
Yeah, that's actually a real shame that there's so many artists who could really capitalize on their talent, but I don't know, the industry seems really twisted in that way. Like if you have good talent, you're forced to spread yourself in all these different departments, and there's no independent artist who has the money to afford a PR agent or a manager or someone up front. You know, and you're lucky if you get a label with your first release or something, or your first two releases, even, especially today, for people to put an investment into the kind of exposure that you would need to make a living, you know, because from streams, you're not going to get that much money, if any, and you might get it from touring, but to get people's attention to want to come to the shows, and especially at a different city, you have to have the money to push yourself in that city. And it's like a vicious cycle, because in order to get the money, you have to get the fans, but to get the fans, you have to spend all this money.
Yeah.
It sucks.
I just realized that very recently. Like, I always thought if you make undeniable great music, it will work. If you're Jimi Hendrix of today, it's gonna work. But then again, no independent person has hundreds of millions. Like, I don't think you can reach that level of success without poster campaigns and funding and investments in promo in different countries. And I mean, yeah. I'm sure there's one example that will prove me wrong.
I mean, well, that's actually the point. It's like all these exceptions, because I think what you're saying is right, but of a different era. I think before the internet, you had these incredible talents because they had to work through so many filters to get to the top. I think there's a lot of lost great talents, of course. And like now that we have the internet, we can go back and look at that era and find these little tiny bands that didn't quite make it, like Big Star, for example. Big Star would never, you don't know Big Star.
No.
Okay. So Big Star wouldn't be as huge as they are now if we hadn't had the internet, because they were this band. From the 70s. They had this like unbelievable roster of great music. And they had three and a half albums or something like this. And they didn't make it. They kind of jinxed themselves. And then now, you know the show, That 70s Show?
Yeah.
You know the theme song?
Okay.
That's Big Star, but right. I think it's The Clash covering it, or it's a big band covering the Hanging Out.
Right, yeah.
That's Big Star.
Oh, cool.
And Elliot Smith has a famous cover, I think, of a Big Star song. Won't you let me walk you home from school? Won't you let me meet you at the pool?
It sounds like Jordan Prince.
I covered that for a while, but
yeah.
But
nice.
No, Big Star has these great songs, but that's what I mean. Like, I think in like the 70s and 80s and before that, you got really lucky. You still get really lucky now, but I think you only saw the best of the best because they had to pass so many filters to get any sort of attention. And now, because of the internet, you have fucking anybody that does anything who has a computer at home releasing anything. I mean, right?
Yeah, but...
Because, I mean, there's so much to work through. There's so much to filter through. I mean, everyone who does anything... Like, if some guy fucking uses... Apple loops or something and has a drum beat and plays terrible something on top of that and then records it. He can pay out of pocket to distribute it through like CD Baby, put it on Spotify or just put it on SoundCloud. And then he can submit through these like pay per submission blog sites to get bloggers to pay attention to it.
Crazy.
And then if one blogger just happens to like it because their taste is shit, then they can put something about this bad artist out, but that just blurs the filters even more.
Yeah, because you can't actually call it a bad artist then if someone likes it.
Exactly.
Then it's just a niche artist, you know?
Yeah, because I think, yeah, that's exactly it. That's exactly what I mean.
What I'm saying though is anyone can... I guess if you release something, you will find some people that will like it for some reason.
Yeah.
Unless it's Muzak, you know.
Which everybody loves, I think.
I don't know, but what I'm saying is to get to the high level of mainstream, there's some kind of paywall or whatever, like filter, I don't know, money boundary, I don't know what you call it, that you just won't reach the people Ed Sheeran's reached just because your song's as good as his song. Without...
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
Without money.
Yeah. A shit ton of money. I mean, imagine the amount of money that goes into like the tour promotion, the billboards, the online promotion alone, like getting... these huge Spotify billboards, Facebook videos, YouTube, Google ads, like promoting.
And this is what you said, like spreading yourself too thin. Like now a musician like Jim Morrison or something, he's just supposed to like expand his mind and then, I don't know, express his feelings in this 60s shamanistic performance that I want to see. This is amazing.
Yeah.
I don't expect him to know how to make a Facebook banner photograph. Do you know what I mean? Or how to optimize hashtags on his Instagram. That's crazy.
Yeah, that's a dangerous combination. That's kind of gross.
He should be bad at it, actually.
Yeah, he should be really bad at it. There's this musician from New Orleans that writes these fucking incredible songs, and he has such a good voice. And he's kind of famous for being terrible with promoting his own art or his own self, you know?
That's great.
And which is kind of a weird thing in itself, right? It's almost like it's a shitty place to be in for him because it's not his fault. He just shouldn't have to deal with that.
Mm.
You know, he should be focusing on his music. His writing and his singing are great. I mean, it's just astounding what he does, but he cannot promote it digitally, which I think is the only way an artist, not the only way, of course, there's always chance and luck and skill, but social media is such a big thing. I had a friend's band from my hometown, and they moved to Nashville, and they play kind of southern progressive emotional rock. It's kind of hard to name it. It's like kind of dancey, but it's southern-ish, whatever. But they told me one time that a label approached them after a concert and said, look, we've been checking you guys out. We love your style. We love the way you sound, but you don't have a big enough social media footprint. So we're going to have to, so we're, you know, we're, you're on our radar, but we can't give you anything right now. And when they told me that, I was like, is that really where we are now? The labels won't take any sort of chance on someone that they approached them and said, we've been following you. We like you.
Prefer them not to even say anything.
Why tell them anything? Exactly. Why?
Yeah.
Why say anything? I don't know.
I had a dinner recently in Berlin with some music industry types.
I love that your hands were up like Berlin. Is this like, not? Oh shit.
Yeah, and the conversation went to Spotify, and there were four musicians on the table, one manager and one producer. And the manager and the producer, basically their point was like, what are you complaining about? Like, this is the best time for music ever. Like, I find so much new music on Spotify. I love Spotify. Like, now the boundary to release is gone. Everyone can release. It's the best time ever for music. And I don't know. I don't want to be too negative. That's what I'm saying. Like, we weren't there in the 70s, and we don't know what that was like to try and be in a band with... Is it 70s is like before A&R people?
I thought 70s was like a huge A&R period.
Or is that when the A&R... At some point, the A&R people came in, and that was the new challenge, to sort of impress an A&R guy. But before that, then what was it? It was like, I don't know. Labels throwing money at everyone and seeing what sticks.
Yeah, kind of.
I don't know. I'm just saying, I don't want to be too negative about the situation. I don't want to complain. And if I have to make some, I don't know, Instagram posts to promote my music, then we're going to do it. We do it, you know? Musicians are paying people to help them make great music. I don't know.
I think something that really sticks in my mind about this is, let's say you have 20 artists, and depending on our taste, we'd say that 11 to 12 of them are really good. And then you have about 8 or 9 that you'd skip, you know, for whatever reason. They could be great musicians, but it's just the style or something. It's just not your thing. I think one thing that's really kind of hard to swallow is the idea that you can have these 20 musicians, about half of which are really great, and about half of which are either amateur or bad or just something. All of them could put the same amount of money into every single outlet that you're trying to do. You know what I mean? Like, you could have these exact same 20 people, good or bad, putting, you know, X amount of money into Google AdWords, YouTube ads, Spotify, playlist curator submission forms, Instagram post promotions for when you're playing in a different city, Facebook video promotions, Facebook event promotions. Facebook is a fucking thief. They have every option available for the desperate musician. And they could all put the same amount of effort into it. I feel like that is a really dangerous place to be for a musician who, one, works hella hard on their art, two, gives a shit about, like really, really gives a shit about who's hearing it, where they can try their best. You know, for guys who are working without a label, without a manager, they might have a booking agent, but they still have day jobs, and they're putting their own money into promoting themselves. I think it's a really dangerous place in terms of social media, because these guys can just capitalize on that and say, it doesn't matter if this band has 45,000 likes on Facebook or Instagram followers, and this other band has 310, because they're paying the same amount of money. You know what I mean? Like, there's no filter for them to first off, they can't decipher if it's good or bad because that is subjective, but they also aren't deciphering fan base, or they're not deciphering what kind of search engine attention is being brought to which artists. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but you
or
mean...
are they?
Hold on. So the 310 followers, they're also using these paid services.
Yeah.
Oh, but they...
In this allegory.
Yeah, but they're... And they, for some reason, they have fought a lot more and they have a lot less.
I mean, the followers aren't necessarily part of it. What I mean is, like, I think it's a dangerous world for independent musicians to live in because social media companies are capitalizing on these artists' desire for promotion.
Yeah, all right, yeah.
Sans label, because they can give them $25 here and $50 here for promotion, social media promotion. I think they're kind of robbing them, you know, and that people like us, that's kind of what we have until someone steps in and says, hey man, don't worry about it. Focus on your art and we'll take care of it, which is kind of what they did in the past, more or less. You know, of course there's issues with everyone, but the issues were different.
I heard like Bruce Springsteen, I think it's his first album was a flop or something, or maybe more than one, but he had time to develop in his contract. Like, we keep trying, go back and keep trying. And then whatever one kicked off. But then in 2008, when I was coming up in Manchester, like in this scene, the goal was to get a record deal. Like that, there was no other, I'm going to do this myself or any like that. It was like, right, what do? You do gigs and then A&R comes to your gig and then you impress them and then they sign you and you get an advance and then you get a record deal. This was like 2006 or 2007. And it was, the music was, the Kooks were massive at this time. Arctic Monkeys had just kicked off, I think.
Was the first record or?
I'm not sure. I might get the years a bit wrong, but the only problem then was it already changed. Like there was no development deal for like some of my friends that were, they got this huge contract and they got hundreds of thousands to go record their first record. And then bam, they released it on the radio and it didn't work because it was just when the music, like the radios in England stopped playing these guitar-based music. Like it was at the end of the Kooks' reign and Arctic Monkeys. And they said, at the moment, more electronic music works better. So they missed this wave. Because I think around this time, any indie rock guitar-based band got a record deal. Like it was, that's what they were looking for.
Yeah, it was and like then, the hype or whatever.
Yeah, and then it didn't, so their album didn't sell well and it didn't chart because it didn't have radio play. But they were a great band, really good band, called Twisted Wheel. And they got dropped straight away, like after one try. No, there's no development time or anything like that. Right. Yeah, but now it's totally different. Now I don't have this hope or whatever that someone's going to come to my concert and go, you know what, we've been watching you and you're great, we're going to do everything from here out. Like,
but you don't have a big enough social media footprint.
Yeah.
But that's like the nightmare.
No, I'm not waiting for this. That's not the goal, you know. The goal is just releasing good music and whoever likes it. And you play live and you try and stay alive. And
you
make enough money.
You play your best and you hope that people come.
Yeah, yeah. Right? And it is independent and like you do it yourself. I'm not waiting for anyone to come save me, you know.
I love that. I mean, it's true to form. You know?
You just signed some contract or a booking contract.
Actually, we didn't sign anything.
Oh, well, sorry.
Just a verbal agreement, but... Yeah, that was cool because I let this other guy go in February, and then we can talk about it, but I might cut it.
But okay, you have a new booker now.
Yeah. It's this guy, Dominic, from... Do you know these guys, Grand Hotel Van Cleef? Van Cleef?
I've heard of it, but no, not really.
Okay. I feel the urge to ask you some questions about it, being an expat, because that is definitely part of this.
Yeah, we're just rambling about Spotify at the moment.
No, it's wonderful. That's great. But I did want to ask if you could list like your three biggest, like your three most negative responses to having lived in a foreign country. It doesn't necessarily have to be because it's Germany, but like the most stressful, like, have I made the right decision encounters, and then three extremely positive things. I just thought of this. We can also rephrase it.
I try. The first one that comes to mind is...
Negative or positive?
It's both.
Okay.
It was, hey, you're from Manchester. Cool. The great bands are from Manchester. That's a musical city. Do you want to play at our festival? Yeah, of course. And they give me a great show and like introduce me from Manchester, England, Matthew Austin. And... it was great, and I capitalized on being from Manchester, and they respected it. And then I was here a few more years. I stayed here, and then it was like the same thing sort of worked against me. It's like, oh, you live here. And I was like, yeah, I live here now. I moved together with my girlfriend or whatever. Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh, but you're from Manchester. Isn't that like a great place for musicians? I was like, yeah, it's okay. It's pros and cons, you know, but I live here now. It's great. and that somehow is a negative thing now. It's like, so you're not on tour. You're not visiting us.
You're not some gift anymore, but you're just one of us.
I don't know.
I had the exact same thing from New Orleans, actually. 100%. Yeah. Exactly the same story. And then you always get the follow-up question of... but you speak German though, right? Because you live here now.
Mm.
Yeah, and I get this reaction. The same. Exactly.
Oh man,
that's a hard one. You're a novelty at first. Novelty in the best way possible.
Yeah.
At first, you're like, oh my god, I just got this great opportunity because of where I'm fucking from.
Mm.
That's insane. You know, it's like the most positive immigration story ever. And then they get bored of that novelty.
Yeah, that's the main one.
I'm glad you said that. I'm glad that someone else feels that.
I'm trying to think of an anecdote. Whatever, you get it.
Let me ask this: like, when you started dealing with the language, with German language, like. Let's definitely get it out of the way that it's not beautiful. You know, it doesn't just roll off the tongue romantically or something. But, I mean, what would you say are your biggest weaknesses with that? Because I have so many.
With language?
With German. Or languages in general.
It's good that this is your first podcast, because this will be said again, I think, which is even when I try my best in German, the response is in English.
100% every time. Yeah.
Yeah. But I'm not complaining. It's nice. And I've lived there for over 5 years now. And I know a lot of words and I know a lot of, I understand a lot, but there's a barrier in German that is a whole new thing for my brain in the sentence structure and cases and even gender of different things. That's like the reality of learning a completely new language.
Yeah, there's like these plateaus you reach, right? There's like this. Yeah. I don't know if there is anyone listening, but like when you get to Germany, there's like these letters, right? You have like A1, A2, B1, B2, C1, C2, and like C2 is completely fluent. You're doing business meetings. You're doing completely intercontinental conversations, easy, relaxed, business, whatever. But A1 is like, hi, how are you? Where's the toilet? You know? And I think you have these certain plateaus where the first year, I don't know how it was for you. I would love for you to tell me, but the first, for me, the first like year or two, I would say even the first year, because I had zero friends and I had zero things to do and I had zero fun. The first year, I came here completely blind and ignorant and like wandering. And I focused all of this energy that I had on other things.
Music, huh?
Music, yeah. But I had all this other extra time that just went into the language classes.
Ah, okay.
And I would say that the first year or two, there's this plateau of like just crossing right over A1, the basics. And then you get into like medium hard basics, like A2, you know, but then there's like A2.1, the first level. And then there's A2.2, which is like the second level before you cross over into B.
Okay, yeah.
And I would say this A2.1 was my first plateau where it was like, okay, I've got my hellos, I've got my goodbyes, I've got my I'd like to order, I've got my where's the toilet, and I've got my, you know, I did this very simple, you know, past tense thing, like a very basic idea of what to say. And if someone was talking to me and I was in the right mood for it, I could get it if it was slow, clean, high German. But then I would say that plateau is extremely difficult to climb over. It took me, this is my fourth year now, and I'm just now, 3 years later, getting to the point where I'm crossing that same plateau. Because then you have this huge cliff to climb before you get to like, I can bump into someone at a bar and speak to them in German and have no issues, no insecurities. Like if something's wrong, it's okay. They might not notice it, but they're not going to respond to me in English.
Yeah. I think that's a polite thing, isn't it? If they notice you're struggling or are you making too many mistakes, then straight to English, they switch.
They switch. Where are you from?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
but I think you'll always have an accent. So you
accent's fine. I don't mind having the accent, but
I don't know about this plateau yet, but I'm.
Or how did you feel about it? Because that's how I pictured it.
I never done any courses.
You never took the courses.
I did one when I first got here. It was with the job I had, but it was really like kindergarten level, Eins, zwei, drei.
Okay.
You know what's funny? My girlfriend's little sister. When I say dry, she laughs. And I was like, what do you mean? She's like, and then she takes the piss out of me. She's like, Eins, zwei, drei, I'm drying the plate. And I'm like, I still don't understand the joke, but apparently there's something wrong with the way I say it.
I'm laughing this hard because I had the same thing happen to me.
Come on.
I have this friend from Australia and she has trouble, like in German, you have like the word for I is ich, like I-C-H. And some people have the problem saying this sound,
yeah.
like when you, like a spray paint can or something. And she says ick, you know, but a lot of people say that.
It's a northern thing as well, I think. I've heard a few people in Berlin, you know, say
like,
that.
Like the light is like licht and she'll say licht.
Oh, okay. You know? I'm not sure about that.
Yeah. Oh, I think ick, just for I, is just from the Berlin, I think.
Yeah,
right?
Some dialect.
But
yeah.
She, for any CH, like her boyfriend's name has a CH, but she'll say it like a CK. And I love that.
Yeah.
The sad thing is she speaks much better German than me.
Yeah, because you're focusing on the little things.
Eh? Yeah, that's actually true. Yeah, maybe I'm just self-sabotaging.
Yeah, so I just did this kindergarten level German course, but now this target for me is B1s, because I think B1s is the first sort of test with any weight to it, you know, like it means something if you have a B1s German. Was it B2? Yeah.
Well, even having a B1s means you cross this this basics plateau. Now you can have conversational.
No, but not just for how you speak, but like legally or something. I think
for most international visas, a B1 is what you kind of look for.
Exactly, yeah. And being British, maybe I need a visa soon.
Oh yeah, right.
Maybe. Oh, who knows? I don't know.
I don't know. Are you really concerned about that?
The only thing I'm concerned about is I want to be free to live here and without any and travel in music. I want to travel all around. Playing.
Yeah.
And if there's any problem, then I would just like to have the German citizenship as well. And my main thing that holds me back for that is the language, because you have to pass some nice tests.
So, I mean, so for you being from the UK and based in Munich, I guess you've had to go to the KVR, the Café Air. So I think what it took for you is different from what it took for me to live here. So tell me about your process there, because I'm curious about that.
Yeah, until today, it's the same as any European, as far as I'm aware, which is you just move there and this Anmeldung thing, that's the first word you learn in German.
Oh, yeah.
You register your address.
Right.
And then that's it. That's all you need.
So, but did you have to set up like your, did you have to file like a health insurance plan, or that just came with whatever job you could get? Because for me, I had to sign up for this like temporary health insurance, because it's illegal to not have it.
It was very simple. And
okay.
Yeah, you just pick one and then you write to them, hi, can I join your health insurance? Done.
How much was that for you per month at the time?
I really don't know.
I had this thing called Care Concept. I think it was like 35 euros a month.
That sounds really cheap.
It was just for a few months. I don't know much about the company, but it was extremely cheap. But it didn't cover everything. It was like, I definitely could not have a serious accident in that time.
Yeah, I don't know. We're very different on this topic, because there's no, like, health insurance is public in England, or whatever the word is. There's National Health Service. It's just, you just have health insurance. I remember stories from American friends saying, don't call an ambulance because it's going to cost too much money.
Yeah, like, thousands. Yeah.
That's a crazy concept for, like, what? You broke your arm in the skate park.
Yeah.
Call the ambulance or whatever. You broke your leg. I don't know. But so health insurance wasn't even a thing in my head before I came to Germany. And I was like, what? Yeah. You have to pay? Oh, are you joking? But it was, I think the people at my job helped me. I was doing an internship in some design company. And
that was the first job you had here?
Yeah, yeah. That's why I came here, actually.
You came here for a design job.
Yeah, which is, I went to Berlin first, and I was playing music on the street, and then ran out of money, and then I'd studied design. Like, when I was in a band in England, my friends were all studying, like, in the band as well. So I studied as well. I studied advertising and design, and then ran out of money. So I thought I should do this design thing on the side, and then try and make music work. But yeah, and literally I just Googled health insurance, people that speak English in Germany or something. It was Technica Krankenkasse. And yeah, it all worked good. I can't remember exactly how much. It wasn't a lot, because it's based on your income, isn't it? So
I think it depends how you're registered, because if you have a full-time job here, I even had a full-time job at two different cafes, and they covered my health insurance. But now I have a day job at a school that's full-time, and they also cover it. But Ify, for example, she's...
Künstler.
Yeah, she's freelance. I think that's selbstständig.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
And that's...
This was one of my first... this was one of my first big... problems in Germany.
Yeah, I think that's like 400 euros a month.
Yeah. My friend randomly, I don't know where we were, probably in a bar, said, hey, but you're... Because then after this internship, then I became a freelance musician. And I was like, I'm going to do music, forget this other stuff. I put my whole 100% into it. And he was like, yo, you know, you have to go to the Finanzamt, like the finance center, and you have to register as a freelancer. And I was like, really? And they were like, yeah, man, like...
You can't just do it.
Yeah.
If you tell the state that you're doing it.
Yeah, yeah. With everything,
that's scary.
With everything in Germany. But so I went there, and they were a bit confused while I was there. And they don't... My experience, I don't know about you, is anything with amped in it doesn't speak English. They... No. And I think
they,
it might
they
be...
they don't
a,
like to.
I think it might be a law. Because...
No, it can't possibly be.
we've been in conversations with the people there, and they've like, I forgot a word or something. I was like, you know, the word, you come on, you know it, you know it. And I know they know it. Like, I know they speak in English. And they're like, no, and they're just, it's like, I was like, is this a law? Are you not allowed to speak English?
I think they really don't like to. I think they really don't like to. I mean, they must deal with so many, especially now in Germany, they must deal with so many refugees. They must deal with many people that they.
Yeah, I think it's changed a bit now.
Yeah, maybe so.
What was I saying? Yeah, and they're a bit confused. And I was like, yeah, I'm self-standing or whatever. And I did it. And then I didn't check my post for a long time. And my health insurance was changed from what was acceptable or what was manageable, I can't remember, under 100 a month to over 400 a month. And I didn't even know because I just didn't check my post. And then my post changed color. It started arriving in yellow envelopes.
Oh no,
the paper was yellow. And I was living in a WG, Wohngemeinschaft, which is, I live in a shared flat. And then my flatmate saw it and she was like, yo, like your letters from the government are yellow.
Like you're fucked, man.
that's not cool. And then, it was bad. I had to really deal with it. And I had a huge debt to the health insurance company because as a Selbstständiger or whatever, I think it's some kind of old word, which means you work for yourself. So therefore you're rich. Like, so your health insurance is a lot.
Right. Yeah.
And then I had to prove to them my income and what it actually was. And I got it more to a manageable level.
Well, see, that's a cool thing. I think that you can do this freelance tax identity, and you can also prove to them the income that you make and have a reasonable health insurance for that. So you're registered as a freelance?
Not anymore, no.
Not anymore, okay.
Now I've changed, and this is the best thing in Germany for me, which is the Künstler Sozialkasse.
What's that?
I can't believe you're asking me. You must know her. That's for... Anyway, right.
I'm sure I've heard of it, but I think because of my circumstances, I'm not registered that way.
I mean, also, I don't know how it changes for American or whatever, but Künstler Sozialkasse, which is as long as you can prove that you're... income is mostly coming from art, then you can apply to be in this Künstlerkasse, which means artist
register or something, right?
Like artist insurance.
Art, yeah.
And which brings your health insurance down to a really manageable level, also based on your income.
Excuse me.
And that's amazing. So going from England to not needing or for it being taken care of in your wage packet without you thinking about it, then coming to Germany, realizing, man, this is difficult and expensive to pay your way here because of extra costs like health insurance, that then realizing, they're supporting artists, this Künstlerkasse. And it's very difficult to get in, and I had a German friend help me with all the paperwork, and you've got to apply back and forth quite a few times, and they got to really check you out. But if I had to send them like the newspaper cuttings and proof that I had concerts and my money was coming from art rather than a day job.
Yeah.
Yes. And now I have a part-time day job, but more money comes from art than from the day job. So
you're currently making more from music than you do from the day job.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
That's a stipulation of the Kasse. You can't, if you make more money from the day job, then you can't claim you're an artist or whatever.
Oh, fuck. Yeah. Okay.
Which is,
but that's pretty impressive. That's pretty amazing that you can do that.
Yeah. I also think Germany's great for supporting artists or musicians.
Yeah, that's a big positive, yeah.
Yeah, what was your three questions at the start?
Three most negative interactions with this culture, this language, or your life here, and then three very positive things. So I think we covered positive. Positive would be like how they support artists. I agree with that.
Yeah, yeah.
and you're, the thing, a negative thing you said was being considered like a novelty and then it fading very quickly.
Yeah, yeah. They respected the that you were from somewhere else. It wasn't, they weren't afraid of you. They liked it, yeah.
Right.
So, yeah.
But I mean, did you have any situations where from people who live in Bavaria, like, I don't know, do you see like the public transportation grumpiness? are you full steam ahead, like completely into it? Because I'm not used to public transportation that works like this. So I use it all the time now, and I never had it until I moved here. And now that I'm deep into it, I see this grumpiness that for me, it's like, for example, literally yesterday, I was on this tram from, I forgot the neighborhood, but near where I work, going home, and I was talking to a colleague. She's German, but we were speaking English about other colleagues. Like, some guy had a birthday, and we were just talking like, can you believe that this guy is this age? Ha ha ha. He looks so different than this. Just small talk, like just fun chat. Mm-hmm. This Bavarian guy sitting across from us on the tram got so personally offended by the fact that we were talking, and we weren't screaming, but he was so offended by the fact that we were talking. First off, talking in general, maybe also talking in English.
Who are you talking to? May I ask, like, where were they from?
My colleague was German.
German.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But she's, it's a bilingual school.
Right.
So her English is great, and we're just chatting, and he got so offended by us talking. And I really don't know if it was English or just volume or something or not, but he literally, in German, I mean, he looks us both in the eye, stands up and says, "Oh my God," and gets up and goes to a different seat.
Says it in English.
No, in German.
In German.
Oh my God. You know, and then goes to a different.
It'd be funnier if you said it in American accent.
Oh my God.
Just.
I would love that if he was like secretly American. He was like, fucking, I hate these guys. That's why I moved here.
Yeah.
But that was such a crazy thing.
Oh yeah, right. But we gotta isolate the exceptions from the general, you know. Is it too easy to generalize? Like,
of course. Yeah, of course. Yeah, sure.
My positive back, yeah, my positive story is whatever. I'll tell it in a bit. But I should just tell it. My positive story is I was talking to my friend pretty loud and in English, and it was a funny story, and the Bavarian ladies started cracking up laughing.
That's great.
Yeah, so yeah.
So yeah, again, it's always to situation, of course.
And also, like, in Berlin on the public transport, it's a completely different thing. Like, my experience there is, yeah, no one cares about English language there because it's everywhere.
Yeah.
But this is a real, like, different culture with how they look at you and how they're extravagant or whatever. They look you up and down, and then everyone stares at everybody in Berlin. Yeah.
They're like, we're fucking fly. How fly are you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's weird. Yeah, so it's not a German thing. And then Bavaria is pretty conservative, and
yeah,
people also say like it's private, like people keep themselves to themselves, they don't stare at you like in Berlin, and they don't want to, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I don't think it's a negative thing towards English speaking in public.
You don't feel that in Munich at all? Or you've never had that experience, I mean.
I probably have had it, but
I wonder since you're from the EU for now, if maybe that concept just naturally doesn't cross your mind.
Which concept?
The idea that speaking English should make you feel insecure.
Ah, okay. No, I've had an experience. I dated an American girl who was very loud.
You're welcome.
And she's from Chicago.
Chicago.
Yeah, and she was loud. And we went on a walk.
I cannot imagine you dating a loud girl.
Yeah, well. We went on a walk around Starnberg. You know Starnberg? Mm-hmm. It's like a... I think it's literally the richest area in Germany. Huh?
There's like a... Is that the one that has the lake?
Yeah, yeah.
Starnberg is it?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
And I think football players live there, and it's a retirement place for Munich wealth. Anyway, there's a nice little coffee shop halfway around the lake. And we went in there just to get warm because of a chilly day. And there was one table left in the middle of a full restaurant full of people enjoying cake. And we sat right in the middle, and this Chicago accent telling me about teenage experiences with girls.
Okay.
Then I felt like,
okay, so you felt embarrassed just to have this volume of English.
It was volume, and we were so out of place. Like we weren't shouting in Bavarian, you know, we weren't one of the crowd. We were definitely like,
you stuck out.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
But I don't know. So,
and she's like, oh my God, you can't fucking believe this experience I had.
Exactly, yeah.
Or whatever exactly. Chicago sounds like. I'm sorry, guys.
Yeah, so I've had the experience as well, but I don't think, I don't find any negative reaction to English so much. Obviously, it's somewhere, have you ever seen this movie, it's called Old Boy or something?
Old Boy, the original, or the one with Josh Brolin?
He's saying Old Boy, not Old Boy.
Oh, you're not saying Old Boy.
No. No, it's a German film, Old Boy. I think it's called that. Or it's called... The English title is like A Coffee in Berlin or something. Mm-hmm. Maybe I get the title wrong. Anyway, I think it's literally about a local Berlin guy ordering a coffee in his local shop and the girl replying in English. And like, it's a black and white movie. It's pretty cool.
You should definitely send that to me.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And I think it's about, I can't remember watching it all. It was in German. But yeah, it's like about this how their neighborhood just changed and whatever, gentrification or London middle class students moving to Berlin. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, but.
That's funny, actually. I just recently went to Brighton last weekend. And I went to this place to get a highly recommended fish and chips place. And I don't know if have you been to Brighton before?
No.
Okay. Been there. I was going to say, maybe I can get the name if you know it. But it was just this pretty small place, mostly a kitchen with one bench. And you just order it to go. And there was this girl at the register. And I walked up to ask about what some of these fish, like the differences and stuff, you know, whatever. I don't know. And she had this deadpan, extremely American accent.
Ah, weird.
And I mean, like this very, you know, calm face, like kind of expressionless. Like maybe this is just her boring job to get through studies. And for a second, I thought maybe I'm kind of mishearing her. And so I asked her a question that like a rhetorical thing. I already knew the answer. Like, oh, what is really spicy? Is that really spicy? Or, and then she's like, yeah, it's like really spicy.
Shit.
And I was like, oh, okay, you're American. And it just threw me off for a second because I don't know why in Germany I've gotten so used to hearing American people in places where I don't expect it. So now it's kind of numb to me. Now I'm kind of used to it. But I really, for some reason, didn't expect to see an American working at a fish and chips place in Brighton, of all places.
Yeah, also, it's not what you want as well. You
it's
want
not a, what I wanted.
You want authentic Brighton girl to, I don't know.
Can you do a Brighton accent?
No, I guess it's just like a southern London-y style. Huh?
Are you decent with accents?
Not really, no. I've got the Manchester one down pretty good.
You nailed it. Sounds great. I can't wait to hear what you really sound like off mic.
This is my...
It's like, hi, I'm Matt Austin.
No, but yeah, maybe the fish and chips like taste worse because you.
I was a bit bummed to see. I wasn't that bummed, but I was definitely surprised. And you know, she was just like, "Yeah, I'm here for a year, just studying at the university, and it's my day job." And
it's crazy,
but I don't know. I think I don't know. There's so many good things and difficult things. I wouldn't say bad things, but there's difficult things about living in a different country. And I don't think it's specific to Germany as much as it is just specific to a place that speaks a different language naturally. And I think for me, my biggest negative, and I don't know if you ever experienced this, for me, the biggest negative is you walk into a room, maybe it's your first year or second year, through a mutual friend, you are invited to a party, for example. And you have this person invite you over with the intention of meeting new people. And you walk into the room and maybe you're introduced to a few different people who are excited that you're from a different country and they're very nice, they're very welcoming, they're very warm. They tell you whatever is there, you can have it, you can grab whatever drink and here's where the bathroom is and yeah, you can smoke over there and everything's very sweet. But then that moment comes maybe 20 minutes in, maybe an hour in, where people just forget that you don't understand.
Yeah, yeah.
But either the dialect or the language at that speed.
Hmm.
And you are just engulfed with isolation. And I don't pick you out as someone who probably seeks out attention. I think you're pretty relaxed in a room in the corner. Maybe it's... You know what I mean? I feel like you just have your thing.
Seek out the bar.
I feel like you have your thing and you're pretty cool with no matter what happens. And there are some people, including myself in this category, who back home was very comfortable in the spotlight with their friend group and felt like they could make anybody laugh depending on the situation. And when you had a good group going, felt more confident or just more welcomed by being able to kind of control like the humor or something, or just to give entertain more.
Yeah,
you know, maybe it's an American thing, or maybe it's just me. But going to a party like that, and this has just happened over the past four years, it's just happened countless times where, you know, there's this part of you that says, "Of course I'm going to go. This is a great chance to meet somebody, and it's so nice to be invited." But then there's that moment where you're standing there, literally surrounded by people that, one, you can't understand, two, are so nice that you don't feel like cutting off their conversation with your language.
Yeah.
You don't want to like cut off their steam.
What you are laughing about?
Yeah.
Explain it to me.
Tell me. What'd you say? You don't feel, you know, like, yeah. I don't know. I get super insecure in those moments.
Mm.
And I think like, there's so much, I don't know, if you're inviting someone who doesn't speak your language to a party, I would say, like, remember that.
Come on, you can't blame them. Remember, come
on. No. Actually, you're right. Yeah. That sounds bad.
Remember that, man. Like,
you're right. That sounds bad. No, I'm joking. But I shouldn't blame them. You know, it's my own insecurity. I'm there for whatever reason.
Yeah.
So I shouldn't... The thing is, I get inward. I go inward. I go in my mind and I get really, my thoughts just wander aimlessly. And when I finally come back to where I am, I just get super lonely.
Yeah, man. But then you can write a nice song and that's why you're a musician.
That's actually how the song Parade came to be. Yeah. First year I was like, I don't know anyone.
Yeah.
And I'm going to drink a lot.
Totally. I totally know what you mean. But I got a positive and a negative to add.
Please.
In that situation, in walks a guy from Missouri or something. or another expat. Same situation, and you become best friends for that evening, which is positive because it's like, yo, do you understand anything? No, me neither. Like,
Sure.
Let's hang out.
Yeah, that's happened. Sure.
And that's cool. But then it's also negative because it's like you don't, then you're hanging out with one of my best friends in Munich. He's from Manchester. And I met him here in Munich. It's crazy.
Did you meet him in a situation like that?
We were in a studio and he heard my accent and he was like, "Where are you from?" I was like, "Where are you from?"
I was just about to try and do an impression, but I would just butcher it.
Yeah, so it's positive and negative, but I totally feel you. And for the first, I'd say, 2 years as well, I was drunk at parties. Like, because I moved into I had a chance to live in my own flat or into a shared flat. And I was like, definitely the shared flat. I sort of became part of this friend group. And I got invited to many parties and they were from Munich and they're locals. And I was like their little novelty friend in the party. But yeah, if I felt insecure or whatever in a party situation, then they've got good alcohol selection at most of these parties.
Yeah. I mean, Germany does have really good beer, just to be clear.
Yeah, and that was the social crutch, just getting wasted. And but it was nice as well. It was a good time to just party, you know?
Yeah.
Not there to have a debate about German politics.
And I mean, honestly, maybe people like me need those kinds of situations that they've never been put in before. Learn something new about themselves.
It's a positive.
It's a positive, you know?
Growth.
It's growth. Americans don't fucking grow as much as they should in certain states. In certain locations, certain situations, they're not forced into a situation where they don't know anyone, they feel super alone, and they don't know how to feel happy.
Mm.
You know, they don't know what to gain from it or
unless
learn
Jack,
from it.
Jack's there, Jack Daniels.
Unless Jack is there, his buddy Jim, you know.
Yeah. No, that's
Hendrix.
What was the saying then? Oh, yeah. Oh, another. Yeah. I also used to like then go to the playlist and just put tunes on or something. Or
if you have control of the music, that's going to save your life at a party like that. That's going to fucking save your life.
Yeah. Another positive thing. I'm from Manchester and I was.
You?
I was in the Manchester music scene like since I was 14, 15, trying to sneak into bars, trying to meet, like trying to be Manchester guy, perfect guy, you know. But I also have blonde hair, which for me was an issue. It was like, hold on a minute, everyone's supposed to look like the Beatles around here. Like, I look more like Kurt Cobain. He's not from Manchester. Whatever. I don't know what I look like. But
was it blonde like actually a thing in Manchester?
No, what I'm trying to say is I was doing a bit of a different style of music as well. I was more into blues and like deltary stuff, Oasis. I love Oasis. I've been to see him at Manchester City Stadium, and it was a beautiful, Mancunian moment. But they're not my number one band. You know, I like other bands like Joni Mitchell. And so do other people in Manchester, I know, but growing up and finding out who you are was really, I didn't feel 100% like a Manchester guy. And then it's like, who do you support, City United? Like, come on, mate. I've just been listening to all of Jimi Hendrix records. I've not got time to watch like Premier League. And it didn't fit with my mates or whatever. And so I think that's one of the reasons why I was like, you know what? I'm going to Berlin where everything's different. And I just want to, maybe there's some blonde haired people there.
In Germany? Nailed it.
Hey, this is not about that. Yeah. But no, I don't know. I was just searching for something different and I got a bit bored of like, I think one of my friends got his girlfriend pregnant and then he got a mortgage in the street next to his parents' house. And I was like, oh, okay. Like,
I see what can happen here.
Yeah. And yeah, whatever. I was searching for new things. So I went to Berlin, like a bit of a cliche, but it was cool. And then now, if I was prime minister, I would really support all this Erasmus programs. You know that Erasmus, like
I don't know it so well.
I think it's the European thing, maybe not American, but it's a student exchange thing. And it's like, so okay. The university swap their students throughout from Spain to London, whatever. Yeah? And I'd support every English person leave England once. 6 months minimum.
I would say the same thing about Americans, honestly. It's too easy to live into a bubble, especially when the country is that big.
So big, eh?
Yeah. I mean, there's like a whole culture built around the New York bubble, the LA bubble alone. Then, of course, I consider it to be like a New Orleans bubble, Portland bubble, Seattle bubble. Any major city that has any cultural relevance, there's a bubble surrounding it. And I think it's very easy for people to consider that is the central hub of the universe.
Mm.
And they don't learn anything. They don't grow. They bounce the same energy off the same types of people forever.
Yeah. So that's a positive. I think go to a party where no one speaks your language and see how weird you are. You know, are you weird?
That's a fucking beautiful way to put that. Yeah. That's a really big positive takeaway from that.
But I guess there's a negative in there as well. Like, it's meant being.
You don't have to fish for them. I think you're a really good pro to my con.
Yeah.
No, but if anyone actually hears this, I'm not as negative as it might come off. I think I just want to know the true experience from someone who also moved here. But I think it's interesting to see the differences you have built in just as a European, as compared to someone from America. And I'm interested to find out also how someone else feels from South America or something, or from Iran
So I'm working in this bar. That's my day job or night job, whatever. And that I meet, because it's also central in the city, like Hauptbahnhof.
That's Kukuruku.
Yeah. I meet so many, like, it's like a halfway house or whatever, you know, like so many immigrants, South Americans, Syrians, everything. It's crazy. And like when they know that I can speak English to them, like I want to speak English more than German, then I get to know a few things. And yeah, it's interesting. Not really got a point.
No, but you come across so many different kinds of people. That's a pretty cool place. I think that bar too is kind of like the Berlin of Munich. Like just that bar.
Yeah, I guess so. They're trying to be more relaxed.
I think that's a really easy bar to be yourself.
Mm.
And there's a couple, you know, there's I would say there's definitely a handful.
Yeah.
And there's a couple of really good venues too where you feel like, hey, this is kind of like a second home. I feel good here.
Yeah.
You know? Took some time though.
But it's not, do you think that's a language thing? A melting pot thing?
I think the language defines the culture a lot. And I think especially if you're born and raised here, it's not that German is defining where you are, but it's more of like Bavarian. So being based in Munich, I think Bavarian language drives the Bavarian culture, which shapes how people here tend to think unless they're a bit cultured or a bit like easy.
Yeah. But yeah, I meant though in the bar, like.
Oh, in the bar.
Because I'm the barman there, or one of the barmen, and I reply to you in English. Like, if I don't understand what you're saying,
I ask. Well, that's what I mean by, I think it's the Berlin of Munich kind of like.
Right,
I mean, that bar is extremely cool. And of course, as we know, the owners are really great, cool guys.
It's an attitude. It's a
special circumstance.
Yeah.
There's so many like these, what do you call them? Like Kneipe?
Kneipe, yeah.
Kneipe. That's like these little tiny, like old bars that are driven purely by these, you know.
One old woman.
Yeah, surviving by these like 3 or 4 70-year-old people that go there and chain smoke and have the same beer every day. And, I think these kinds of Kneipe, these kinds of bars exist in every city in the whole world.
Yeah.
But then sometimes you have a city that has a special bar like the one you're working in, which I think gives an alternative for younger people to feel kind of like, okay, there's something for us too, you know?
Mm.
And I think Munich has a few of those for sure. Berlin has hundreds of them. But I think Munich's coming along.
Yeah, I really like Munich. That's the other question is like, the first question is, why did you come to Munich? And the second, but like the actual better question is like, why you stay in Munich, you know?
Like, oh, yeah.
It's a great place. Like, it's conservative and it's very boring and it closes on Sundays. But
yes, yeah.
At the same time, it's relaxed as hell and yeah, there's no crime.
Very. Yeah. Actually, no crime might be the biggest thing. I don't know how crime is in Manchester, but New Orleans crime is humongous.
I think that's different, yeah. I think that you're on B's Fi crime.
Oh, man. I'm like, there's documentaries and shit about about the crime.
You shouldn't laugh, eh?
That's true. But it's you know what's funny is like I got so comfortable with the safety here that when we went to Brighton, we talked about leaving the gear just behind the stage at this part where that was kind of backstage, but you could still access it. And then for a moment, I don't know if you know my drummer Mark, but we had this moment where we were like, actually, this is not Munich. We should not do that. People will steal your shit, man.
Yeah. It's another thing in the bar. Like, people leave their phone and sometimes their wallet on the bar and go for a cigarette outside.
Unbelievable.
This is ridiculous.
On the table.
Really,
yeah.
On the table, same thing.
That's really special to Munich, I think.
Where I grew up, you put your... If a girl has a bag or whatever... You wrap it around the chair leg and sit on the chair. So if you're putting the bag on the floor next to you, like you, come on, you can't just leave it. Yeah. Also, I always talk about my bicycle has never been stolen in this city.
You just jinxed it, man.
It's due.
This whole coup is to keep you busy while we steal your bike outside.
Yeah. I lost my train of thought.
Now, Rikukuruku is, yeah, that bar is a really special place too, in terms of Munich.
Back on the train of thought, the support for artists here, like this is Artsy Fartsy podcast, huh?
It's the Artsy Fartsy podcast, yeah. Artsy Fartsy immigrants.
One of the things when I came to these parties we're talking about, and people are like, what are you doing? And I was like, music, I do music. And they're like, really? When can we see you? Like, they totally gave it 100% respect. Like, yeah, if you say you're a musician, then I want to hear your music. And then if you say, okay, I'll play you a song and play them a song, then there it is. Like, you, I don't know, they respect it. It's like, but I don't know, from a previous experience in wherever, you say you're a musician, people are like, yeah.
So what else do you do?
Yeah, yeah.
So how do you make your money?
Come on, then. So am I.
Yeah. Oh man, yeah, in New Orleans that's really everyone's a musician
and a songwriter.
Oh yeah, and producer, and like, oh man, I'm gonna fucking blow up, you know.
Yeah, but maybe that creates really good music.
The competition is,
yeah,
the force is strong with those guys.
I just meant there's a respect for what you do, like if you, I don't know.
Yeah,
I think
yeah. Even if
you're a barman,
yeah.
like oh, you're a barman, like you're not. They respect that. Like then you must be able to make a good drink. You must be qualified in it. You must be able to. Do it to a level like, oh, you're not a barman. You know.
Yeah, that's 100% true. I completely agree with that. Yeah. There's definitely respect to it,
and that's why you get paid as well.
There is much. That's the best pay I've ever had for concerts is in Germany.
Yeah.
And the protection you have and like the security you have, that how you get from A to B and how you play that show and stuff is all taken care of.
Mm.
And that's really special.
How was your ride or whatever, your what's it called? The food at Brighton, Great Escape.
Oh man, we had great food.
But like free, like paid and sorted out. Was there nice backstage?
Nope, none of that.
That's what I mean. Like in Germany. That's sorted out. Like, yeah. What's it called? Not Ryder. I forgot the German word.
Like the catering Ryder.
Catering, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's everywhere true. You go.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I love that. And I haven't played like, of course, there's always small shows that are just like, here's some drink tickets. But like any show that's like your name, it's booked, people bought tickets, they take amazing care of you. I love it. It's like, here's your backstage spot. Here's your own, normally like here's your own space. And here's your, whatever the band needs. Like if it's alcohol, if it's just water, tea, coffee. And then like if it's warm meals or like warm meal tickets, if it's like a festival with food trucks or something, that's a really great way to treat the artists.
Yeah.
And that's, I never had that before that.
No, me neither. I don't know if it's because I got better or it's because I moved to Germany.
It's very easy to, it's very easy to feel spoiled, I think.
Yeah, and it's not a diva thing. It's just practical.
No.
If you eat good and you know where to chill out before the show and everything, there's a merch table, everything, like then everything's going to go well. Like,
yeah.
Or you're going to do the best you can. Yeah. And I swear, like, Manchester, like, I remember arguing at soundcheck because the microphone they provided smelled like really strong cheese and the other one didn't smell so bad. And it's like, who's gonna, you're having this mic, I'm having this mic. But here they take soundman seriously, the backline seriously,
yeah,
and catering and all that stuff. You got to respect that. The negative to that though is it turns you into a pussy.
You get really spoiled by it.
If you're selling out venues in England, then you're going to get a good treatment as well because you're making somebody money.
I think if you're selling out concerts anywhere,
yeah,
you're going to get treated really good. But I think Germany is really good for, like, you take yourself seriously, you have a good ticket sale at this, you know, from small, medium, large size venue. Here's everything you need, you know, or you're playing at a festival where you're going to be like a new artist. You're exposing your music to people for the first time. They still take really good care of you.
Yeah. It's like they give you a chance.
They give you a chance to feel comfortable and do your best.
Yeah.
And that's something you can't take for granted.
And if you suck, they'll just shake your hand and won't book you again.
Exactly. Yeah. they'll just say, thank you so much. That was amazing. But
yeah,
that's true. Yeah. That's true. I think there's something I'm really curious to find out if we do get to do all of the guests that I have planned. I'm really curious to see like the different perspectives on how different kinds of artists are treated, and especially in Germany. Like, there's also a dancer from the Gärtnerplatz. Maybe you know him.
Javier.
I want to get him in here.
Cool, yeah.
And there's also a... like some English actors. I want to get this screenwriter, and I want to see, like, is the general treatment of artistry better in Germany? And I have a feeling that it probably is. I think there's just so many kinds of protection and like insurances that you can apply for. Like, for example, this Brighton thing, like you just suggested, like all the catering and stuff for the artists in the UK was pretty bad.
Yeah.
Or I would say it was like,
it's a different concept.
I don't want to talk bad on it because I had a great time, but it didn't compare to the care that Germany takes. But Germany paid for my ability to go there.
Crazy, yeah.
You know, like Bavaria protected, like because I was part of this artist support program, Bavaria paid for me to go there and covers the flight, covers the Airbnb, covers the food that we pay for because they don't offer it. You know what I mean? So like any disappointment I might have had with like not having a backstage was totally obliterated because I was like, well, no big deal. Let's go get a beer over here, get a food over here, and then come back and play just as comfortably as if we would have had a backstage to ourselves.
Yeah.
Which you really can't take for granted. That's really special.
Yeah. I don't want to go too negative now, but I've thought of a negative.
I feel like I've been only negative, so you have a right.
Yeah, good.
Yeah.
So when I ignored my paperwork situation here and I started getting yellow letters through the post, that's when I really felt like an outsider or someone that wasn't trained in how to get by in this system. Like, even like filing my taxes in England is challenging, yeah? But then filing them in German,
all the papers that come are in German.
Yeah, so
this bigger threat.
Yeah, and There seems to be a game with everything as well. And if you follow the rules, and like we said before, you apply to be selbstständig, and then you're this freelancer, then you pay full freelancer amount, unless you know that you have to then challenge that amount, and then there's a little more paperwork that you have to do. Otherwise, you just pay the general high amount. And then it's the same for everything. Like,
I just want to take a small pause.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you were saying you don't want to go too negative, but it was like this... You were receiving the yellow papers, and you're like filing taxes in the UK was already difficult, but then now doing it in German is a big threat.
Yeah, I guess... Yeah, basically the story... I don't know how to start, sorry.
That's my fault.
No, it's okay.
You were saying like you have a negative... But it was about so, the taxes.
Yeah, paying. Sorry, babe.
No worries.
Imagine, So I was getting these yellow letters, which are dangerous letters from the government that you should not ignore. And I didn't know that. That's a cultural thing. Like, You know that someone gets a yellow letter, there's a problem. So
I just know if I receive like a red letter, you know, or something from anywhere, it just seems like either I'm fucked or someone's gonna kill me.
So doing your taxes or being starting your own business in England is hard enough. So then with all these little cultural things, that's one of the biggest challenges in a different country as well. I find it like double as hard. And then surrounding me, I would tell people like, yo, I got a yellow letter. They'd freak out. They'd be like, what? No, it's really bad. And then I would start to understand, oh, this is serious. Okay, right, thanks. Or I'd be like, so you also live in this flat and your job's not that good compared to mine. So how are you paying your health insurance? And then they have their own little game sorted out. Because they're a native and they know the system, or their parents know the system, or I don't know. They, for example, like someone I lived with, she had a great job.
They were also expats? Or?
No, German.
Oh, okay.
I was like, what have you done today? And they're like, oh, I just went to the uni. I was like, eh, but you're not a student. And she's like, no, I was just, I just registered as a student. I was like, why then? And it was to get student rates, health insurance or student benefits or something, because like to be a student here is free, so you can literally enroll in some nothing course.
Right. Yeah, you can register like I am a student.
Yeah.
Like with tax and law and.
Yeah, yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's smart.
Yeah.
Nobody told me. No. Yeah, so, and that's another challenge. So. In your own country, it's hard to start a business or to be a freelancer. In another country, it's double as hard. And then, yeah, and also with the, as a musician as well, you're literally sitting at home writing songs about your feelings and trying to share it with the world. So you've already got a bit of an existential crisis going on. Like, what am I doing with my life? And on top of that, I'm in a different country where I don't know any of these games that,
right.
These people know them. So you've got to catch up like on a cultural knowledge of how to break the system. Because
yeah. See, for me, that's the interesting part is like when you're in your homeland, all these other things come natural or they're things that you don't think about. So how you create your art, whatever it may be, is the thing that you can focus on, because the other stuff is like, oh, I got to do this. I got to do that. But it's the natural part. Mm. Right. So here, now that you have it like right in front of your face, different language, big yellow paper, like you're not dealing with this, kind of blocks that in a way. I mean, of course, we talked about all the protection and the great benefits and stuff, but it's a bit of a block, right? It's a bit of a...
Yeah, but you got to know how to get these benefits. That
right.
And like you said, you're part of a artist support thing, or this, there's a really good one, this initiative.
Initiative, yeah. It's like initiative music.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're great. Like you, if you know how to do it,
right,
you can apply to them, and if they want to support you, they will help with costs or whatever.
Have you applied with them before?
No, no, because I don't know how you do it. Two, from what I know, you should really do it when you've got a big project that you want focused.
I think they support a lot of different categories, like short tours or promotions or like if you have a big release. I think as long as whatever you're doing benefits the creative world of Germany. Does that make sense?
Yeah, of course. Yeah,
if you're doing something that benefits at least Bavaria, I don't know if it's countrywide. I think different states in Germany have different versions of this. I think Bavaria has an initiative, and it's if you're benefiting or showcasing, representing Germany from this region, then you can apply.
Yeah, that's crazy, isn't
which
it?
Is cool.
Yeah, we, my other band is Matthew Matilda. We released a record in 2017, an EP, and then it got picked up, whatever, by local stuff. And then we, we applied for this Bayon Bavarian.
Bayon, yeah. I did that for a year, yeah.
And they do some great stuff. And one of the great things they did was put us on this Reeperbahn festival.
Yeah.
Which is like showcase festival, a bit like your Great Escape one in Brighton.
And actually, we had the same one. You played 2018 Reeperbahn, right?
Did you play Reeperbahn too?
We did the same Bayon showcase in 2017.
Yeah, yeah.
We were there with Xavier Darcy and I think Dizauna or Nisala.
Dizauna were there when we played. So
okay, so it wasn't them then. Nisala. It was Adolescence. Adolescence.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, so it was the same. Was it at the...
Sommer Salon.
That's exactly the same one. Yeah,
it's great. I love Hamburg and I love Reeperbahn and all that. It's crazy. But what's crazier is it was promoted as Bavarian Music Export.
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
That is so weird. Like, I'm totally... We are a Bavarian band somehow, but that's hard to get into my brain. And when you're in Brighton, Great Escape as well, it's also Germany.
It was representing Germany, yeah. It was like this Zeitgeist showcase.
It's a bit strange.
We were the only non-German band. No, that's not true.
Was your bass player German?
Yeah. Well, we took a different one because the one that we usually play with, of course, is English, but... he was already on tour with this other band, so we took someone else. He was also German, so we had two Germans and me. But still,
Jordan
the
Prince.
Project is not German.
Yeah, that's a strange one. But then again, like you said, if it's benefiting German culture, then they're happy to support you. They don't care if you live here. They don't care.
Right. Yeah. As long as you're if you go somewhere else and you're representing, okay, we live in Germany. This is how the German music scene is playing out.
I can't imagine. I might be wrong. But a Manchester like artist development thing. And then some German guys.
Do you know of anything like that in the UK?
I know. Nothing off the top of my head. I know some showcase festivals, especially in Manchester. There's one called In the City, which that was like the goal, to get a good slot in the city close to the hotel where the A&R guys are staying.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Right. It's all the mingling stuff. But, the artists that play that festival, are they submitted there by a manager or like a label, or can the artists submit to play themselves? Because I think that's the big difference.
Okay. Yeah.
You know,
I'm not sure. I really don't know, but
for example, we both played this, Reeperbahn festival because Bayon suggested us to play it, and the same was for The Great Escape. So I wonder if it's
the city, you mean, in Manchester.
I wonder if it's like
I really don't know. I don't know. what's interesting about Manchester now is when we were teenagers playing, the promoters were like our enemies. They used to rob our ticket money and like not, it was all like somehow pay to play, and these dodgy guys that had a promotion company, you had to call them to help you get a gig at the venue. They just ripped you off and you got paid nothing. Or you, if you didn't sell enough tickets, you had to pay them.
Oh, I hate that. I hate those setups. That's crazy. That's absolutely thievery.
Yeah. And these guys they ruled these certain venues like in Manchester. But anyway, now we hated them. It was like, really, we were so, yeah, fuck these guys or whatever. But now, because we all got a bit older, now my friends that were in the bands that didn't make it or whatever, but they're still in the music scene, they've become those guys. So they're the new promoters. Now they're ripping off new, like, teenagers, you know. No, they're not ripping them off, but now, yeah, so there's a lot of, I have a lot of connections in Manchester, but they all have no idea where I am. They're like, or if they even think about me, they're like, hold on, didn't you move to fucking Berlin or something? Like
So your old musical connections back home don't know anything about what you're doing here.
Yeah, I mean,
or just what they see on social media.
Yeah. But it's a bit of a strange concept. Like, well, what were you doing over there? Like, it's a bit of a strange one.
Did you tell anybody that you were moving?
Where is he? But it's the same thing about not knowing the system in Germany. You grow up with these guys and you know this guy and this guy, and then your network is there, and then come into a new place, you've got to start a whole new thing. Yeah. Pros and cons, maybe.
Yeah, I guess there's a lot of them though, but I think for at least for being a musician, Germany has these really funny games, like you said. And if you play them right, then you get these amazing benefits that they definitely don't offer, as far as I know, in the States, and maybe as far as you know in the UK. But once you do play them right, it's a benefit that should definitely not be, what's it called? Like, it shouldn't be taken for granted.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
You become a wunderkind.
Yeah.
And they just start pushing you. I don't know. Yeah. One thing to change topic for a second. Mm-hmm. One thing think about is, because I went from the age of 22 to 27 or whatever, while I've been here, through these important years somehow, I don't know now if the people I meet in this age group as well, I don't know how to word this. Have you ever met some absolute nutcases here? That's a no, because you'd have a story ready.
Wait, well, I'm just curious what you mean, like nutcases that are specifically German? Or?
Yeah, like, I don't know how to start what I'm saying.
I mean, there's crazy people everywhere, sure.
Yeah, that's what I mean. But like, when you're in school and you're 18, everyone's got a dream, and everyone's going to do that dream, and she's going to be a famous actress, and she's going to whatever, be a director, and he's going to play for Man United. But then it all doesn't happen.
Yeah.
And then you're just meeting everyone in the pub and they're just like, oh, yeah, Man United are dicks. They didn't take me.
Oh, man. Like these people who still resent that the dream didn't work out.
Somehow, yeah. Anyway.
Oh, that's right.
So I was in Germany for most of that time, and I've just met a load of people whose dreams didn't work. So I've just...
Oh, shit.
And then I'm like confused. It's like, are German people like weird? Or all these 25-year-old Germans that are panicking now because they got to get a job in an office. Are they, I don't know. You have to start this again. I'm not explaining myself.
Well, like, what do you mean? So you go to a bar and you meet the people whose dreams didn't work out. And are they delusional, resentful? Are they self-aware? Or the characters that you're talking about?
I really think we should start this topic again, because I've not explained it well. But what I mean is, I've experienced... It's hard to separate your life from... No, like your experience of life, like, is it different because you're in Germany, or is it, would it be like this in England as well?
Oh, that's a great question.
You know what I mean?
That's a great question.
So like, everyone I meet, are they just assholes? Are they weird? Or is like, no, you're hanging out in bars a lot. You're meeting 26-year-old people who've just given up on their dream. Or you're meeting like a different kind of people that are like, I don't know. I don't know, losing the plot.
I think my life is drastically different from how it would have been if I had never moved. I think about that all the time.
I know, me too. That's why it's a hard topic for me to try and get off the ground, because I don't know. It's a big one. It's a really big one. Like, what if? It's like a what if.
What if is like the most fun, but also... What if is like either the most rewarding or most like demoralizing question you could ever ask yourself, you know? Because you can see the what ifs of things that you were a part of that failed, and you're like, fucking hell yeah, I got out of that, you know? Yeah, hands clean. And then sometimes you see what if about things that either seem the same, that you liked how they were and they stayed the same, or you liked them and they got better. You know, like if it's an artistic project, or if it was an ex relationship, or if it was like an association you had with something that was back home. There's bands I was a part of that some went down and some went up. The what if question applies to both. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or like relationships, friendships. Would I have the same kind of... I definitely know that I would not have the same outlook on life had I not moved abroad. Absolutely not. I think that's like the most important thing. That's why we both talked about, you think everyone from the UK should travel once. I think everyone from the States should, because you do gain... For better or worse, a perspective that you didn't have before. And I think, honestly, humans just need to have different perspectives on certain things. Like, I have a bigger world picture now. I never had a very big picture of the world growing up. Growing up in the States, especially in the South, very small image of the world, very small image of my own life. I only really paid attention to the people around me, the town as an entity. You know what I mean? And then going to New Orleans, it was a bigger image and it was a bigger perspective, but still a bubble. You know, you only thought about musicians and dreams and goals and stuff, and like people talking about, oh, I'm going to do this, I'm going to start this, I'm going to start this. New Orleans has this beautiful, crazy energy of like, what's about to come, you know, so it holds you down. And that was the bubble I was used to. Then moving abroad, then you have this, I need to think of a nice term for it, but just this kind of all-encompassing silence. Everything that you had back home is cut off. It's 10,000 miles away. And you have to find a new perspective in order to gain some sort of sanity about who you are. There's an entire different world that you never saw, never were forced to expose yourself to it. You had an idea, you know what I mean? But like now that I've lived abroad for 4 years, whenever I listen to podcasts or watch movies or TV shows and stuff from back home that I was really into 4 years ago, when I watch them now, some things about the humor or the perspective change because I see it differently now.
Crazy, yeah.
Especially from people that have absolutely never left the States no matter what, because their idea of people from different countries is so stereotypical, and it drives me nuts. It drives me nuts that when they just hear, for example, like, because we're here in Germany, hearing the word German, it's especially just bad American humor to go instinctively to a Nazi joke.
Yeah.
And it's like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, you don't have any education at all or perspective or ideas about the modern Western world and how different anybody can be anywhere. I mean, give me a break. It drives me nuts.
It's crazy. I see it when my friends come to visit me and they start with this shit. I'm just like, listen, you can't.
That doesn't fly.
You're not saying that anymore. This is ridiculous. People think you're stupid if you talk about that.
People think you're fucking stupid if you talk like that.
And, and they're like, oh, I'm only joking. And they are joking, but it's just an old joke.
But it's rooted in something really ignorant.
Yeah. And then I also overhear other English guys or whatever groups on the train or that I don't know, and I hear it again, and I'm like, well, you clearly have never been here before, like,
yeah,
because yeah, oh, it's a bad one.
That's a hard one. Okay, let's wrap it up. First I want to say thank you for being the first guest here. I'm very honored, and I think it was a really great explorative conversation about a lot of things that it's exactly what I wanted to cover. And yeah, so with all the luck in the world, someone will hear this. So if you want to just mention new releases, new concerts, where people can find you, just let us know.
Yeah, nice. Thanks also for having me.
It's my pleasure.
Cool. I think we broke some ice.
Yeah,
let's see how it grows. I have a session that I released today, actually. I don't know when this will go live, but I released a live session today.
Yeah. Today is May 17th, so you released a new session today on May 17th?
Yeah, it'll be you can find it on my Instagram, at Matthew Austin. And then, yeah, I go on tour in the summer, and then I release...
You have quite a big support tour with Amy, right?
That's Ami. Right. Yeah, yeah. I play basically every date with her, which is amazing because I didn't book any gigs this year or this summer. So I just jump onto her tour, piggyback. It's going to be great. Yeah, and then I steadily release singles from my record throughout summer, and then I think the record at the end of summer, or maybe it's winter.
Okay, and this is just Matthew Austin, or
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I just focusing on Matthew Austin at the moment.
All right. Okay, everybody. So at Matthew Austin, he's going to be on a big support tour with Ami Varning. Check it out. And thank you so much.
Thank you.
Artsy Fartsy Immigrants. Ein Podcast von Jordan Prince, produziert von Moritz Batscheider für M94.5.